Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Thank you for joining us for Everything Under the Sun, the AccuWeather podcast. I'm your host, meteorologist Regina Miller. I'm joined in the studio by Andy Robb, my producer, and also Ken Prell, our director of audio services. This week, guys, we are going to be talking about the spring forecast, zone by zone.
We need spring.
We do. I need spring starting in like the end of December, so I'm always ready for it. But this week we are going to be talking to our long-range meteorologist, Max Vito, and Paul Pastelak. And we're not only going to be talking about the spring breakdown zone by zone, but also this past weekend, really tragic situation. There were at least a dozen tornadoes that touched down in Alabama and Georgia, and over 23 people, at least 23 people, were killed as a result of that. Really, really tragic situation. So you can't help but, when you're doing the spring forecast, to talk about tornadoes, severe weather. It's all part of it. So stay tuned. They're going to break it down for us coming right up. Well, it's always a good day for me when I get to be joined in the studio by Paul Pastelak, our long-range meteorologist, and Max Vito, who are going to be talking to me. You know, I only get to talk to you guys four times a year, really, and I really wish I could talk to you much more often because we do it at the beginning of every season.
Let's change it.
You know what?
We can do it anytime.
We can just hang out at my house.
Are you sure you want to talk to us more often? Let me tell you, this is more relaxing talking in this setting than some of the other talks I've had so far in the last couple months. So this is great.
So, but we're talking about the long-range forecast and spring. And so we want to break down so that people know, zone by zone, all across the country, what spring is going to look like. So I'm going to ask you guys, first off, is there any standouts this spring and what you can see?
This spring, like at least compared to last year, looks like a little more of a seasonable transition. Last year, we saw that cold really linger across the northern plains, upper Midwest, even the Northeast, really into the middle parts of April. There were late season snow events that, you know, disrupted travel, caused airport delays.
It was a nasty
transition to spring. And that spring-like weather only seemed to last like 2 to 3 weeks before it was hot, humid, and May was kind of like a torch month across a good portion of the United States.
I would say there was no spring last year for many places. I mean, the Midwest, Northeast. It wasn't a spring. We went from winter to summer.
Yeah.
I know. And we went to tropical Caribbean summer because, like, at some places, like I know in the Northeast, we were dealing with, like, high humidity, downpours, I think.
Through the summer months, yeah.
But remember, we have to get through the first half of March here.
Right.
We count March, the whole month of March, April, and May in our spring forecast. And we are starting out very rough here in March. March coming in like a lion,
yep,
big time here. And I saw departures in northern Montana at -45 degrees
wow,
below normal. So, I mean, that's impressive. We got to get through this cold, Max.
Right. Yeah, and it looks like the northern plains, they're going to see the brunt of the cold through most of the month of March. But I think as we get towards April, unlike last year, this year is going to be a little better there, a little more seasonable. We could even see temperature departures above normal across those areas in the months of April and May. So I'm sure the folks up there are looking forward to that after what was a long-lasting winter last year. And, you know, it's been pretty brutal this February and beginning of March. They're going to want a break, I think, once April comes in.
I think the standouts, though, there are still some standouts. I think we're still going to be wet Gulf states. We're still going to have some fronts. And the water temperatures in the Gulf of Mexico are running above normal still. We're still going to have high dew point air coming into there. And we're still going to have some achieving systems that are going to produce some heavy rain. They're not going to die out when they get to the east. They're going to pull some of that Gulf moisture in, and that's unfortunate because it was such a wet year last year from the Gulf Coast all the way up through the Mid-Atlantic states, and it looks like they're going to continue that pattern here through the spring. And then you look at the Northwest. We do feel that area, you know, getting hit now, and over the winter, but they should dry out a little bit. So they may actually get into some drier pockets, some warmer weather up there as the course of the season goes on. And then in the middle, severe weather, which we'll get into more detail later on.
In the Northwest, that was an area we were initially thinking there was going to be a little more drought development during the spring months, but they've been doing rather well in February and the beginning parts of March here with systems, and the snowpack has definitely grown quite a bit in the Cascades and the Sierras, and near normal or above normal in almost all areas. I don't think drought's going to be as much of an issue this year up there. Perhaps some localized areas in the interior Northwest for localized drought. But otherwise, the West looks, you know, they've raised a lot of drought this winter. So that's good news for the folks out there involved with agriculture.
That was our biggest change.
It was the West. Okay.
From January update to the latest update that we made, we had a bigger area drought. We took it all out. Pretty much we have only some small pockets left of drought. Almost all the drought is pretty much gone out of California.
Because of the snow.
Because of the season we just had here, it just really helped out. Agriculture is looking really good coming up now. I think that's a big standout. Actually, I think that's a big standout because when have we gone without having at least some drought in California in the last recent year? So we're going into spring very good in the West right now. So
And what does it look like for the Southwest? You know, you talked a little bit about the Cascades and the Pacific Northwest, and what do you think for the Southwest?
Yeah, that's a challenging area. Those are places that really start to dry out quite a bit as we get to April and May, and I think that's probably going to occur this year, a pretty seasonal transition in those areas, although March could still be active at times, get those precipitation events into northern Arizona, the Four Corner region, and they've seen immense improvements in the drought across those areas. They had long-lasting droughts for quite a while in the Four Corner regions, and we've seen some of that erased this winter. So that's also good news for those areas.
Eastern areas of New Mexico, western Texas, still has a long-term drought going on. The conditions are not perfect yet there, and they may warm up from time to time in the spring. Mm-hmm. But these upper-level systems are going to still keep coming in there. But the seasonal change is that they don't have a lot of moisture when they go through the Southwest, but they fuel the fire for severe weather in the plains. And so we still have to see whether or not one or two of those systems can produce a little precipitation in the Southwest. So it may not be perfectly dry in the Southwest this spring, but it will be drier from what they've been seeing. We just got to get through March, and March is still active here in the Southwest.
Okay. And then you guys talked about the, the Southeast, Mid-Atlantic as far as wet, last year, and it looks like the storms will, things will still hold together across the Southeast, probably into the Mid-Atlantic in the spring. What about the Northeast?
I think the Northeast is not too bad. I mean, it's a normal transition in the spring, and then we could see some drier weather develop across eastern Canada and northern areas of New England that could work its way down from time to time. So we could get some drier periods at times into the Northeast. The problem is if it's wet in the Tennessee Valley, those systems will come east. Most, I would say that more than half would end up, kind of wimping out and losing their punch getting to the east, so you don't get a lot of moisture.
Mm-hmm.
But there's going to be one or two that's going to achieve. So it's not going to be completely and perfectly dry in the Northeast, but we could see some good, 3 or 4 days of nice weather, which will get people outside gardening and planting, and things look pretty good, I think, down the road here.
Yeah, and just to compare it to last year, because that's in the back of people's mind, I think we had some snow events that continued into the second week of April in the Northeast last year to, the I-95 corridor. We aren't expecting that this year overall, just a much better transition. Cold first half of March. I think when we get towards the second half of March, we're going to start to see a little more impressive warm-ups ahead of these cold fronts. But it's still going to be back and forth. It's the spring. You'll get those days in the 50s and 60s ahead of the fronts, and then 40s and even upper 30s behind it. So better than last year, but still a little bit to go, I think, before we really get that sustained warmth in the Northeast.
Yeah. Okay.
I remember it got hot last year, too, in early May.
Right.
We see warm-ups. We don't see that kind of extreme heat coming in at this point. So
just what you would expect.
Yeah,
maybe,
exactly.
Upper 70s, something like that, maybe.
Exactly.
Well, what are some of the components maybe this year that you really looked at that maybe were your standout components when you were putting this forecast together?
Yeah, so it's a challenging forecast this year. We're in an El Nino atmosphere, but it's not your traditional El Nino. It's more based over the Central Pacific with your higher SST anomalies,
sea surface temperature anomalies.
For the average person listening in.
So that could drive some of the forecast, lead to a little more of an active jet stream, and bring some of those active systems through the Southwest. Not producing a lot of precipitation there, but as they get into the southern plains and the Gulf Coast, doing quite well, you know, helping out those systems and fueling high precipitation amounts across those areas. Not a whole lot of blocking in the northern areas. We saw a good reorganization of the polar vortex in the later half of winter, so we're not really seeing that cold in place in the northern parts, in north central and northeast. As we get into like the middle part of spring in April, it looks more organized this year, more of a west to east flow across those areas.
I think that's the big one there, Max, is the difference from last year to this year is that the polar vortex is reorganized already back over the polar region. When you see that, it introduces more westerlies, west to east flow in the mid-latitudes.
More zonal.
More zonal, so that you have fast-moving systems typical in spring. And so you don't have the major extremes that you did, like last year. Last year, we had a disruption late in the winter season that lasted throughout much of the spring. And so that polar vortex, well, the effects of it, lasted much longer into the mid part of spring, and so we had all the cold and the extremes going on. We don't have that this year.
Right, because when you look, kind of like trying to paint the picture for the listener, is because when you look at it and the polar vortex is not organized, it'll be dropping down. You'll have that jet stream. Yeah. Will take the big ridge on mm-hmm. one side, the big dip on the other, because of the fact that it's almost like you picture the polar vortex kind of like wobbling down in.
Creates more amplification of the pattern.
Yeah, right, the patterns. Yeah. So,
and that's what produces those extremes and more noticeable weather.
Real roller coaster kind of weather. Yeah. So now, one thing you mentioned, Max, was El Nino, sea surface temperatures, and the fact that you may have more of those systems coming across the southwest and heading to the northeast. And so one of the things I want to talk about, because that helps to contribute to the severe weather that you often get across the southeast, correct?
Yes, yeah, so the El Nino type atmosphere can actually be a negative factor to severe weather over the typical Tornado Alley regions of like eastern Texas into Oklahoma, parts of Kansas. But it can be a plus factor once you get farther east along the Gulf Coast, into parts of Florida, into southern parts of Georgia and Alabama, Mississippi, with a more suppressed track. But every El Nino is different, and this year is kind of a little bit of a hybrid El Nino type pattern. So, Paul, do you want to get into that?
Yeah, well, first of all, it started late. And so there's another thing. Usually an El Nino's weaken as they get into spring and early summer. This one's starting late.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, if you go back to 2015, it was an El Nino season, and we had a very active late April and May period with tornadoes, and a lot of them were in the central part of the U.S., not along the Gulf Coast. So there are different types and different scenarios that could take place. So ENSO is not other things that have to be factored in, and there's three ingredients to really hit on that's going on this year.
Okay.
First of all, we talked about the Gulf of Mexico. Warmer than normal than last year. Warmer than last year and still warmer than normal. That's going to give you the moisture you want.
The higher dew points there.
The higher dew points in the low levels coming into that section of the country. Then you have the upper level features, which we talked about, coming out of the southwest. You know, fairly dry in the southwest, but they bring the energy and the dry air you need at mid-levels to get the circulation going. And then the contrast that's set up between the cold that's still lingering over the north central Rockies and, you know, the more warm and moist air that's down along the Gulf Coast. There's a good contrast that sets up. So all those ingredients are going to pull that low-level moisture out of the Gulf towards the Plain States, which it hasn't been doing too often over the last 10 years. We've only seen a couple of years where it has done that, 2015.
And your typical Tornado Alley.
And typical Tornado Alley, which is Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, western Missouri, and Iowa. And so, you know, people have said over the past couple of years in their research that they thought that Tornado Alley is kind of readjusting,
shifting
east. This year, it looks to me that may kind of go against that idea just this year. And we think that things are going to pull a little bit far. It doesn't mean that you can't get any severe weather farther east. It just seems like the concentrated worst of the severe weather, the tornadic activity, may end up being over the central and southern U.S. this year.
May make a return to a little further to the west.
Exactly.
Right. Now, speaking of severe weather and tornadoes, I mean, we've already started the season with, you know, exceptional situation earlier this week, you know, with many deaths here across parts of Georgia and, you know, really sad situation. Now, one thing that we've been talking about here is, can tornadic activity, the amount of tornadoes, numbers, can that be predicted?
Seasonal, you're talking about?
Talking about a seasonal kind of forecast, the way we do with hurricanes.
Let me divide this out here a little bit. First of all, just I want to throw in here and plug in that we got to watch this weekend. Okay, it has been seen by our office since last week that there could be a pretty good outbreak in the middle of the nation, midsection of the nation, coming up this weekend. So be prepared for that. How do we see that? Conditions, favorable conditions look like that, the upper patterns. As far as the actual numbers in a seasonal perspective, we have been doing this for a few years now. Our team, improving our skill. Research is out there. The skill level is getting better and better, but it's still very challenging for tornadoes. But our clients have requested this, our subscriptional clients, that can you pinpoint the amount of tornadoes you can see in a year? Well,
which is really, really hard because they're
almost impossible to get the exact number.
Right.
But at the same time, we can give them an idea from normal, from last year, and we use analog data looking at past years to help us, along with what we've learned from the research, to put together a table to give to them so they can strategize from that number what it looks like from the past 5 years that they had to use for their product, whatever it is, management, damage management, those kind of things, and use it to their advantage to get ahead.
So this is a statistical expectation just because you're just kind of putting different components to kind of hedge our bets in a certain way or a certain area?
Yes, and Max is working on an analog tool to help improve that statistical manner. But at the same time, we have to control the weights that go into this thing. So
your input.
There's input. There's some skill involved from the forecaster itself. This is challenging, and many other people try to do this too as well. And we continue to work on it. Our clients like it. They like the information ahead of time. And we think the public deserves to know ahead of time what we're thinking in a season. To say above normal, people may say, what does that mean? It's
right.
Just like in the past when we used to predict snowfall, we predict below and above. Now we got television stations asking us, so how much? How much? Give us an idea of amounts. And so it's changed. The technology has changed. The research has been, unbelievable. So we felt that it's time for us to start using this and applying it. And that's
so,
what we're doing.
So it's interesting to me because we just had a conversation last week where we were talking about how social media has changed the way we message, or the public's expectation of what we should provide has changed because people want specifics of things.
I mean, I agree. I've taken some heat a little bit on social media.
So people are like,
they think
we want to know how much is above average. So you give a number, which is not expected to be
the exact number.
This is more of a...
It's almost impossible to get the exact number from year to year. But it gives you what we produced out of our model, out of our analog tool. That's the number that was pulled
you're
out.
You're just saying, okay, we'll just tell you what we know based upon modeling and our... what we use.
Yeah.
So this had typically been done kind of behind the scenes.
For years.
And at this point, you're just saying, well, we'll put it up there.
But it gives us an idea from normal where you're leaning towards. If I told you there's going to be 900 to 1,100 tornadoes this year, well, that's a pretty big range.
Right.
Okay, where are you leaning on? Are you leaning on the 1,100 or are you leaning on the 900? Because last year was a down year.
Right.
So giving the number, it shows you where we're leaning towards, but then it gives you the response to say, okay, in between here is where we're going to be looking at this coming year.
Okay. Very interesting. Well, thanks so much for everything that you've provided us, all the information, and I always enjoy talking to you guys.
All right. Great.
Enjoy the spring, everyone.
Have a great day.
And if you want to get the full details on the 2019 spring forecast, just head on over to AccuWeather.com.
Right. You can get all the information there. And you know what, guys, I think it's important, too, to discuss some tornado safety because we are heading into that season. We've already seen some tornadoes that have caused some major destruction.
Yeah, sadly.
Some of the advice is if you can safely get into a sturdy building, obviously you want to do so immediately as soon as you hear a tornado warning. And I want to let people know also the difference between a watch and a warning is if you have a watch, that means conditions are conducive to the development of tornadoes. But once you get a warning, it's either been sighted on radar or, you know, one has been seen in the vicinity or it's imminent. So there is, when you get a warning, it is time to immediately take action.
Yeah, that's when you want to go to a safe room, a basement, storm cellar, anywhere to get protected at that point.
Right. And if you're in a building with no basement, then you want to get to a small interior room on the lowest level.
Yeah, stay away from all windows, doors, and outside walls, for sure.
And you don't want to get, like if you're driving, you do not want to get under an overpass or a bridge. You're safer in a low, flat location.
Yeah, I think that's probably a big one for a lot of people because you think, all right, I'm going to take shelter underneath a bridge or an overpass. Do not do that. And you also want to watch out for any flying debris that can cause injury or death.
And also, you know, if you are in an interior room in a building, use your arms, use whatever you can to protect your head and your neck. So all these are really good pieces of advice. And so we want you to be safe. And like we said, you can always keep up to date with the latest forecast by going to AccuWeather.com.
Yeah, we hope you never really have to use these tips, of course. We always want you to stay safe. But if you do, please take that under advisement for sure. It's nothing to mess around with.
Be sure to join us next week because we are going to be talking about the blizzard of 1993.
That's right. We did an episode before about the blizzard of 96, but now we're going to go back to what they were calling the storm of the century with the blizzard of 1993. So we hope you'll tune in.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. Be sure to subscribe to AccuWeather's Everything Under the Sun, giving you the stories behind the weather and so much more. New episodes every Thursday. Just search for AccuWeather on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or visit AccuWeather.com/podcast.